This is Radio Times. I'm Marty Moscoane. According to the AARP, 45% of adults 65 and older are either divorced, separated, or widowed. And while some are content to stay single, others are looking for a social life, to date, to share activities and interests with another person, to fall in love, to have sex, move in together, maybe even get married again. After all, people can easily live into the 80s and 90s and have active, fulfilling lives. But the dating scene isn't what it used to be, and frankly, neither are you. Today on Radio Times, dating tips for seniors. And we have two guests who have joined us by telephone. Pepper Schwartz is a sociologist and sexologist professor at the University of Washington. She's the author and co-author of numerous books, including Dating After 54 Dummies. Also wrote a book about her own dating in her, I guess, senior years, if I can say, called Prime. She serves as the love and relationship expert and ambassador for the AARP, writes their column called The Naked Truth. Pepper Schwartz, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you. My pleasure, except we don't use that word, senior.
What do we use? Just because I'm
older.
Older? Okay, forget senior.
Later,
older. Okay, I will amend my entire interview based on that. Let me introduce our other guest, and that's Helen Fisher. She's a biological anthropologist, a senior research fellow at the Kinsey Institute, also a member of the Center for Human Evolutionary Studies in the Department of Anthropology at Rutgers University, and she's chief scientific advisor to the internet dating site Match.com. And Helen Fisher, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
I'm delighted to be with you. And hi, Pepper. Nice to talk to you, too.
Likewise.
Well, let me start with you, Pepper Schwartz, because you have sort of lived what it is that we're talking about as an older person, to use your word there. Are you part of a trend, you think, of boomers that are interested in having some kind of active social life as they get older?
Oh, definitely. I'm sort of at the edge of it. My generation has been sort of inventing ourselves as we've gone along, and we've liked being young, and we're fighting to stay as young as we can, and that means that we don't think we're unworthy of embracing love again and again and again if necessary. So, yes, I do think, for all the hackneyed phrases that have been used, that the ages of 50, 60, 70, and whatever else we claim as we age are really different. And I think we feel an entitlement to life's passions that our parents and grandparents did not.
Do you agree with that, Helen Fisher?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, there was a new study that came out that 80% of people who are older, not seniors, but older, do not want to move in with their children and assume regular grandparent roles. They want to live alone. 62% of American widows and widowers choose to live alone and go out and date again. And in fact, you know, I'm the chief scientific advisor to Match.com, and there's another site among that group called Our Time. It's for people who are over 50. And it's apparently the third largest paid dating site in America today. Over 5 million unique visitors come to it every month. These are older people out on the market again looking for their next sweetheart.
And Pepper, is this because people are living longer? Hopefully they are healthier as they age into their 60s, 70s, 80s and beyond?
I think that's absolutely true. Living healthier, living younger. You know, look at the way people in their 50s and 60s and 70s live now, in the sense that they share the same music, you know, many times with their kids. They share the same clothes. They haven't segregated themselves into old age. And so I think both in terms of the cohort, the people who grew up in the 50s and 60s are different than the people who grew up in the 20s and 30s, and also the fact that we can replace our knees, our hearts, you name it. We really can reclaim a vitality that makes us think, 60, we could live healthy for 30 more years. We don't want to do it alone, or we don't want to do it with the guy or the woman we've been doing it with. One of the interesting things is that the divorce rate has leveled off at every age except those people over 50.
And they're still going. And they're divorcing more?
They are, because they're not looking at 5 more years in an unpleasant marriage. Right. They're looking at 30, and they go, you know, I'm not going to do that.
Helen, to you, and this is sort of more broadly speaking, even beyond dating, but just sort of having an active social life as one gets older. I mean, the truth is, when you get older, friends die, family members die, people get sick. I mean, there are those kinds of losses. But is it psychologically and physically healthier to maintain a social life?
Oh, my goodness, yes. There's a great deal of data that, that isolated people have more diseases and die faster. I mean, we're a social animal. I mean, I'm an anthropologist, and for millions of years, we grew up in these little hunting and gathering groups in which there was no privacy. Everybody traveled absolutely regularly with at least 25 other people and interacted sort of almost around the clock. I mean, that's the way the brain is built, the way the body is built. We're built to get the exercise, to get out, to be laughing with friends, et cetera, et cetera. And there's a great deal of data that is extremely healthy for you, as is sex as you get older. I mean, the old thing, use it or lose it, and older people are really looking for sex and love. As a matter of fact, I do this annual study with Match.com called Singles in America. We don't pull the match population. We pull the American population. It's a representative sample based on the U.S. Census. But anyway, one of the questions was, would you make a long-term commitment to somebody who had everything you were looking for, but you didn't find them sexually attractive? And the least likely to make a long-term commitment without sexual attraction and, in fact, without romantic love are people over 60. They want the same things that younger people want.
Should that surprise us, Pepper?
No, because I think the fact is that, they're not looking at this as companionable old age. They're looking at it as love and passion, and that requires something that distinguishes the relationship from mere friendship or, just sharing a kind of compromise for the rest of their life, and that's not this generation.
But right. As a matter of fact, it's the young who make more compromises because people of reproductive age really have got to find somebody who will bear them healthy babies. And they may be madly in love with somebody from a different background who with less education, et cetera, but they will pick a person who is going to be a good reproductive partner. And, older people are unchained from that reproductive need. And so they're going to spend their years finding people that they like, hanging around with them and falling in love with somebody who can really give them what they need, or they'll go out with just their friends and have a good time.
To you, Pepper Schwartz, and you, as I said, you're kind of living this. One of the things that I have noticed with some of my older friends is, and I've tried to put a moratorium on this, but I've not been very successful, is to not complain about the fact that we don't look like we're 27 years old anymore. But I'm thinking about sort of the dating scene and the focus on appearance and how you look and how your body looks. How do you suggest older people think about all of that?
Well, I think they should take some comfort that I don't think it's as critical as it was. I mean, these guys and these women are both not looking like they did at 25. And I think one of the worst myths about dating out there that inhibits both men and women is that somehow the other person's only expecting a 25-year-old, or a 40-year-old for that matter. I think women think much more critically about how they look than men actually look at them, and I think there's a good deal of data to support that. And I also think that while, yes, there are men who are looking for substantially younger women, it's true, nonetheless, that there is a great deal of a great many men who are looking for an age mate, for somebody who shared the life that they've shared. So I think that goes with, realizing that we don't have perfect bodies. That said, if you're on the dating market and you're very heavy or other kinds of non-cultural positions, it might, give you sort of a lower chance of finding a mate as easily. But it doesn't let that possibility go entirely. There's a lot of ways people find each other attractive, and that excludes, for some people, thinking that only a size 6 or 8 is beautiful.
Well, and I'm glad you said that, because I was scribbling as you were writing, Pepper, style, personality. There are so many ways, Helen Fisher, that someone can be attractive beyond just their whatever their appearance looks like.
No question about that. As a matter of fact, quite rapidly after you fall in love with somebody, you don't notice the things that you don't want to notice. It's called positive illusions. You overlook what you don't like about somebody and then focus on just what you do. But just back to Pepper's thing, comment for a moment, which is always so great. And but anyway, you know, in this Singles in America study that I do with Match, one of the times we asked people, you know, what they felt about their body appearance and everything. And the young are more critical of themselves than the old. The older you are, the less critical you are. I guess as if we settle into our skin, we see that this is only part of who we are. We make terms with that, and we go on to set ourselves in other ways. So it's the young who really actually suffer from problems with body image more than older people, or at least that's what our study says. But anyway, on to your question. Yes, yes, there's many, many things that would make somebody attractive to you that has nothing to do with, you know, some sagging here and some bulging there.
To you, Helen Fisher, only because you've looked at chemistry as an anthropologist, is the sort of chemistry of sexual attraction or even falling in love, is that the same through the ages?
Apparently, we've put people in, I and my colleagues have put over 100 people into a brain scanner and studied the brain circuitry of romantic love, and it's just as powerful in your 50s and 60s. We put a lot of people in the machine who are in their 50s and 60s, and we showed exactly the same activity in brain regions linked with feelings of intense romantic love as among those who are very young. So this is a brain system like the fear system or the joy system or the surprise system. And you can feel joy at any age, and you can feel romantic love at any age. So there's every reason that older people, now that they aren't living with their grandchildren and have some money in their pocket and feel the freedom of it, this brain system is like a sleeping cat. It will just wake up at any time, and you can be just as goofy at age 65 when you're madly in love as when you're 25.
Pepper, is the dating scene, is it that much different for people in their, let's say, 50s, 60s, and 70s as it is for their children or their grandchildren?
Well, you know, as you know, I wrote two books on this. One's called Prime, which is really about my own dating experiences between 55 and 60, and the one about dating after 50 for grown-up, for dummies. It's part of the dummy
grown-up
series.
Dummies, yeah.
I don't really think that everybody's a dummy that's going back in there. And I think it's better. You know, I mean, I think you bring, you know, it's dating is you bring a little bit wiser, a little bit more mature, a little bit more self-love to it. On the other hand, you haven't done it for a long time. And while it's not exactly like a bicycle, you put the bicycle away and 20 years later, you remember it pretty quickly. It does come back to you, but you are different, and I think you may not be as savvy about what things to be aware of, to be beware of. I certainly spend a lot of time in my books about dating, not just encouraging people, but encouraging them to be smart about the very few people, but they're out there, who are wolfish about this and want to prey on people's passions. You can be, as Helen is so wisely said, just as goofy about love as you ever were at 14, and maybe even slightly more so surprised at feeling it, that you may not take the proper precautions if somebody out there means to manipulate you.
We are talking about dating for older people, and that's Pepper Schwartz. Also with us is Helen Fisher, and we have comments coming in. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Much more after this very short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and as Americans are living longer and hopefully living healthier for those who are single and older, there's a lot of interest in dating and having an active social life, looking for love, talking with Helen Fisher. She's an anthropologist, senior research fellow at the Kinsey Institute, a member of the Center for Human Evolutionary Studies at Rutgers University, also chief scientific advisor to the internet dating site Match.com. sexandsociology.com. Pepper Schwartz is a sociologist and a sexologist professor at the University of Washington. As she said, the author of a number of books, including Dating After 50 for Dummies, a book about herself called Prime. And she's the love and relationship expert and ambassador for the AARP and writes a column called The Naked Truth. I do want to play a scene from the movie called Enough. And this is a Enough Said, I should say. And this is a scene where Julia Louis-Dreyfus and James Gandolfini are meeting, and they are divorced and on a date.
So how long have you been divorced?
About 4 years.
Mm. And was it mutual?
Not really, no.
Mm-hmm. Can I have her number, please?
Of course.
Can you imagine the time that that would save?
We should all just put a sign on our necks and write down what's wrong with us. Get it all out there.
Oh, that's a good idea. What would your sign say?
I don't know. I'm a slob. I have ear hair.
You know there are things you can do to get rid of ear hair.
Researched. Taken care of.
So you're a slob, huh?
Not like a dirty hoarder slob.
Uh-huh. What kind?
Like a normal, disorganized one.
Does your daughter live with you?
Half the time. It aggravates her sometimes, but the thing is, she and her mother are very, very neat.
Oh.
As a matter of fact, their favorite store is that, I don't know, what is it? The store with all the empty boxes in the store.
Oh, the container store?
Yes. Yes, the container store. The store that sells crap, so you can put your crap in so you can go out and buy some more crap.
I love that store. I love crap.
That's a scene from Enough Said. Helen Fisher, how's that for a first date conversation?
Well, it doesn't appeal to me, but it's interesting how over 50% of people have had the experience of on a first date, you know, clicking so much that they can really think long term of whether this could be a possible thing. So first dates are really scary. They're not scary just for older people. They're scary for everybody because you know very little about a human being. And so you overweight those few things. Now, this woman is fixated on the guy, the fact that he's a slob.
Yes.
Well, if she also found out that he was a wonderful musician and traveled all over the world and read poetry and or whatever would appeal to her, then the slobinitude kind of would recede in her mind. But that's all she's got now, that he's a slob. And, of course, she then says she likes slobs. So we've now gotten over this breaking point, and we'll go on to another. But that's what first dates are all about. People are nervous, and they really have reason to be nervous because you learn quite a bit, but not enough to really know. So I always say to people, you know, if you can get through the first date at all and find it really at all interesting, go out on a second date because the more you get to know somebody, the more you like them, the more you find that they are like you. So just get through those early humps, unless it's obvious to you that this is never going to work. Get through those early humps and get to know the person.
Pepper, you agree with that?
Yeah, you know, what I tell people is, you know, stop making this like a job interview, you know. And the longer list, I say my name for people who have a really long list of requirements of people is lonely because you couldn't check off all the boxes and neither can they. You know, just try to see if there's any spark of interest there and don't, you know, act like you're interviewing them for husband or wife at that moment. Mm-hmm. And I think, as Helen says quite rightly, a lot of people are so scared of silences and so nervous that they, you know, try and keep talking and fill in all the blanks. And I try and, you know, in my books, I try and tell people, you know, some conversations that are interesting that are not going to be pressing buttons, because the fact is that when you're nervous, you may ask or questions or seem like somebody you really aren't, you know, kind of back off and just see what they do with their life and how interesting they are about various subjects. It's dating, again, does take a little preparation because you don't want to present this anxious and, to some extent, in brutal set of questions for somebody who might say, you know, I don't need this. I think it's pretty charming, but I could also see in a real life someone looking at that dialogue and saying, I'm out of here.
And what about talking about former spouse? Is that totally not the right thing to do, Pepper, on that first date?
How many times can I say don't do that?
Yeah, exactly. I just wanted to have you say that, actually.
Yeah. And same, I've got a lot of data on that, too. No age, at no age do people want to hear about somebody's ex.
Fair enough.
Not until older folks.
It brings out the worst part of you.
What is that? It brings out the worst part?
The worst part of you, like,
you know, he done me wrong. She took my money. I mean, yuck.
And how about aches and pains and things
also
that don't work anymore?
Allowed.
We have an email from Paul. He says, I'm wondering about getting older and self-image. When I was 18 and thought about 68, I had a totally different picture of what 68 would be. It isn't a totally colossally different as it seemed it would be. And he talks a lot about self-image and his gray hair and gaining weight. But it is interesting, you know, when you're 25 and you think of someone who's 66 and you think, oh, my God, they're so old. Then you get to be 66 and you think, well, that's not so old, Helen.
Well, I agree. The brain doesn't change. The body changes, but the brain doesn't change. And in many ways, there's new studies of intelligence, and older people are really much better at accumulating data and putting it into patterns and coming up with very wise decisions. So the brain doesn't need to deteriorate in any way. And certainly your interest can grow and grow and grow because you're not so focused on children or on your job, and you can now expand to express yourself in different ways. So honestly, I think people get more and more interesting as they age.
You know, Pepper, I was thinking about sometimes when you see people responding to a movie or a place where you see people in their 60s or 70s dating and they're being very affectionate. They're maybe even kissing each other or being physically intimate. There's sometimes a revulsion. Like people think that this is revolting, seeing older people acting like young people and getting physical with each other. Am I reading that right or wrong?
Well, sometimes you do. I teach a class on sexuality at the University of Washington, and one of the movies I show, an older man who's very much out of shape takes his shirt off, and the whole class groans, you know, like, oh, my God, how gross. And I always say to them, just you wait. How much do you have for this moment?
You and your six-pack abs.
So, yeah, the very young, as Helen has said, are into perfection way more than we are. And I sometimes think, you know, the older people kind of take in that reaction and feel embarrassed about themselves. And, you know, both Helen and I and many other people are here to say, don't you let them do that to you. Mm. You know, the hardest person sometimes to seduce is yourself. You know, you look and give yourself a pep talk about all the good things you own that are real and true. And, you know, don't let, you know, young people's, you know, finicky look at themselves be projected on you.
You know, another thing is that, you know, I'm in Pepper's age group, no question. I think we're the same age. But anyway, I used to, for many, many years, had a boyfriend who was a lot older than me, and we were both old, and we would go onto the subway, and we were just into kissing each other, and we would kiss on the subway, and there was a little part of me that was hoping younger people would see so that they could begin to understand that older people really have feelings, really have passion, can really love each other. I mean, we're at a wonderful time, I think, in human evolution where older people really, I mean, for thousands of years, older people really, their job was to be grandparents and to support the next generations. And these days is an enormous shift into older people living alone and going out and looking for love. And it's the time now to change the conversation, to begin to have people really realize, look, we're still alive, we're passionate, we're loving, we want to express our love, we're looking for love, we can find love, we can, you know, have good, thrilling lives just as the young can. And I we're just in this cusp of moving into a concept where older people are just as romantic as younger.
Well, you know, I can't tell you how many times on television you see ads for Viagra, for Cialis, and these other, you know, sexual enhancement drugs, largely aimed at men. But it does tell you, certainly when you look at the pictures, there are people with gray hair. It tells you something, Pepper Schwartz.
Well, absolutely. The fact is that they wouldn't be advertising it if there wasn't a demand. And there is a big demand because, you know, one of the things that does happen for men, and not incidentally women as well, is, you know, blood just doesn't get to the right parts of the body as quickly as it used to. So the fact that we now have things that can trick the smooth muscles into holding that blood better and getting it there sooner is a great enhancement for men's egos. They were always able to do a little more than they thought they might be able to, given, you know, comparing themselves to being a young man. But now they can be more confident that they can actually have intercourse. Mm. And that makes sex a lot more fun for men. And quite honestly, older men for their women too. It starts, by the way, the need for Viagra starts actually a lot sooner than the age of the people it's advertised at. You know, blood supply is fickle in many men, but the fact that those kinds of pharmaceutical drugs and others are coming down the pike to help women's blood circulation as well, I mean, helps us just like any other medication we have. You know, we now have operations and medications to cure our tennis elbow. So the more parts of our body that can work well and longer, the better we like it and the more we use them.
Helen, do you think older couples and, as you say, you know, having children isn't part of the configuration there, but that older couples are more sexually adventurous, or do we know that?
I don't know. Pepper might know, but I would think that they do. I'd like to hear from Pepper on that one, but I mean, they're certainly going to probably spend more time at foreplay. They've got more time, they've got more experience, and they probably need more time to get themselves really ready to make love. So I would guess, and I don't know, Pepper, what do you say about that?
What do you think?
Well, I would say the only thing is, and I agree with everything that Helen said, is that women are often a little less inhibited. You know, it's kind of like, what the hell? so they're not as good, quite bound up by some of the you know, feelings of what they would have had when they were young. Now, the people who are young now are not the same people who are 60 who were young at that age. They have had a much more sexually liberated world to come in with more information. But nonetheless, you'd be surprised how inhibited and worried and fearful some of these younger people are. And the women who reach middle age and beyond go, they're a lot more secure. They understand their own sexuality a lot better.
And that's Pepper Schwartz. She's a sociologist, a sexologist, also professor at the University of Washington. Helen Fisher is with us as well. She's a biological anthropologist, a research fellow at the Kinsey Institute, also at Rutgers University. And we are talking about older people and dating and relationships and sex. And if you want to join our conversation, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. I want to hear from both of you, but Helen, I'll start with you first. I'm curious about the effect on the children, and we're talking adult children here, when their mom or dad starts dating again and they're in their 60s or 70s. Is there are there some things to be mindful of?
Oh, boy, this is a real hot button. I mean, there's some people who are literally filling out the forms at dating sites for their mother or their father, hoping that their parents will find the right person. And, of course, there's other children who just can't even conceive of the fact that their parents really, you know, that a parent needs another partner. And, of course, they've got some problems. I mean, they may be threatened that suddenly their inheritance will go the wrong direction. So it's complicated, and I would like to say that, I mean, it's person by person. I don't know if there's any basic pattern, but I do think it runs the gamut of people who are thrilled to see their parents with somebody new and those who are absolutely horrified.
And Pepper, how do you suggest someone introduce either the idea or the person to their adult children?
Well, I would say don't ask their permission. You're a grown-up. You've owned it, right?
Yes,
you know, don't
right.
Don't be so worried about them. You know, just say, look, this is my life. I'm very excited and happy to put someone else in it, and I hope you will like them, and I'll introduce them, you know, at the right moment. But I'm doing this, and not let them put them in the parent role where they think they have the right to control it in a way that they would have balked hugely if you tried that after they were an adult.
And are older people, do they feel comfortable doing that, or do they do that default mode of asking permission of their children, Pepper?
I often find them doing the latter, and I think this is a very bad idea. So, you know, I would just say own your own adulthood and your sexuality and your right to have it, and, you know, tell your kids. And I think what you can do is reassure them that you're not going to, you know, spend, you know, every dime you have on this person. And if it gets serious, you can give them some reassurances that you're protecting their interests as well, because often the bad feelings are kind of about that. Really. Uh-huh. I mean, if you weren't so materialistic, but it often is.
But what about, I mean, especially if there's, let's say, a divorce or a death in the family, one of the partners has died. To you, Helen Fisher, oftentimes, you know, children are mourning in their own schedule and may feel a kind of disconnect from their parent who might be ready to start dating again.
Well, that's right. And I mean, Pepper's got it right. Just own your own sexuality and don't ask for permission. I think that's a really, really smart thing. Just don't ask for permission. Go on, do your thing, be sweet and kind and keep them in the loop and lead your life.
And lead your life. We have a tweet from Mary Kate says, so what I'm hearing is the Golden Girls were way ahead of their time.
You know, I think they were. I think they were, but that's why they were such a hit, because they spoke for many women who weren't speaking.
And how do you know, for you, Pepper, and only because you're sort of lived through this, but how do you, as an older person who's sort of ready to date again, you're single, how do you know you're ready? Are there questions people should ask themselves?
Well, I think, yeah, there's in the... my Dating Over 50 for Dummies, I literally have a checklist of dating readiness. And one of them is that you're truly over as much as you can be in terms of being ready for someone else in your heart. You're over it for, you know, whether it's you're through grieving in an active, you know, huge way for a dead husband or wife, or, you know, you're not watching, you know, the life of the person who you thought you could, you know, be married to or committed to. And you don't watch their life and, you know, hope bad or good things for them or whatever, that you're really ready to put your heart out there. And, you know, your self-image is good and your self-respect is good. And you know, there's a whole list of things. I think it's just like you're a whole person ready to let someone really into your life. And if you're not, then you work on that stuff until you are. I mean, that's progressive. But, yes, you don't want to go out there before you're really ready, not to sit there, and this is not a caricature, talk the entire time about your dead wife or husband or the fact that you're probably not worthy because you've had cancer or whatever it is that, you know, you really haven't resolved. I am a great person. I am ready to go out there. I am lovable. I'm going to find somebody.
By gosh darn almighty. Well, let's take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. And that's Pepper Schwartz. Again, she's a sociologist. She's a sexologist, professor at the University of Washington, wrote a book called Dating After 50 for Dummies, also wrote a book about her own life called Prime. And she writes a column for AARP called The Naked Truth. Also with us, Helen Fisher. She's an anthropologist, senior research fellow at the Kinsey Institute, a member of the Center for Human Evolutionary Studies at Rutgers University, chief scientific advisor to the internet dating site Match.com. We're talking about older people and dating and sex. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We're talking about the dating scene for older single people. And you can give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. Let me play a scene from another movie. And this is Meryl Streep and Steve Martin. They're two divorcees from the 2009 romantic comedy, a movie called It's Complicated. They're driving in a car together and having this conversation.
So let me ask you a question. Please don't think that I'm weird or out of line or anything, but do you, by any chance, smoke smot?
Do I what?
I mean, do you smoke pot? I haven't asked anyone that question since I was 22.
No, I don't. But I have. But I don't think I've had any since my kids were born, so not like in 27 years.
Oh, my God. Our kids are the same age. And I haven't had any since my kids were born either, except for tonight. I had one hit from this.
And again, a scene from It's Complicated. And I do want to read actually a tweet from Janine who says, I love this conversation. Makes me feel less anxious about getting older. Good against ageism as well. And Helen, how profound is ageism in this country?
Oh, boy. I think the whole world is coming off of 10,000 years of ageism, and we are at a turning point into realizing that older people are people. The young really still have a very difficult time even believing that their parents are sexual, even though they themselves are quite sexual. And I think it's going to be our generation, Pepper's and mine, and those following us who really change the tide.
Because we're what, boomers?
Yeah, well, because we're the really first liberated, we're really the first generations that went to college, that had jobs, who grew up in Pepper would call a peer marriage, in which there's equality between the sexes, in which both have a job, in which both partners provide for the income, and both cook the dinner, and both help raise the babies, et cetera, et cetera. We're moving forward to a very egalitarian double income family, and along with that, of course, women are expressing their sexuality as they get older, because they can. They've got the money and the time and the experience and the background to do it. So it's a time of tremendous change, and it's going to be these generations, I think, in the next maybe 50 years or so, that really turn the tables and get the world understanding that that we're just as sexual and passionate as people who are 50 years younger than us.
Pepper, is this different for men or women? I mean, is this a different chapter in their lives, and perhaps even sense of adventure?
I think it's true for both, but I think it's especially true for women. I think ageism has hit women particularly hard. But, you know, I think, for example, you know, when you talk about It's Complicated and movies like that, which I have loved, those are path-breaking movies because they're the first ones that have treated, maybe not the first, but among the very few American films. I think European films have had older women in them before. But American films who have said, you know, women of 50-plus are suitable as love interests in a movie. And I think that affects our sense of, mass media affects us. It affects our sense of, yes, we are. And, you know, the fact that Diane Keaton, you know, who looked, of course, lovely, was briefly nude in a film without it, you know, being an ew response, maybe shocking, because we never saw that before. It was more of an embarrassment response, but not for her. But for us, it was, yay, there's an older body, and it's a woman's body, and it's there. So I think for women in particular, to be able to think of themselves as sexy and capable and able to have passionate sexuality throughout their lifetime, this is new. Every day it's new.
To you, Helen, we've been focusing, sort of having a more heterosexual conversation here. I'm wondering if for older LGBT individuals and couples, is it just sort of a variation on what we've been talking about?
It certainly is, and I'm so glad you raised that because, you know, with Match.com, I study not only heterosexuals but gays and lesbians, too, and around the country, not on the Match site, but around the country. And it's astonishing how absolutely, it wasn't astonishing to me, but I think it would be to a lot of people, that they're behaving exactly like straight people. They're equally looking, they've fallen in love just as often. They've experienced love at first sight just as often. When I asked married gay and lesbian people, would you remarry the same person? Over 80% said yes, they would. They have long romantic lives just the way straights do. The only difference is they've chosen somebody of the same sex rather than the opposite sex. But the rest of the brain seems to be exactly the same. Patterns are exactly the same. And I'm hoping that as we begin to understand that older people are sexual and that they're romantic, that we will come to realize that gays and lesbians are really exactly the same.
Let me get Ted from...
I've got the proof for that.
Okay, fair enough. Let me get Ted from North Philadelphia to join our conversation. Hi, Ted. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, hi, Marty.
Hi there.
I'm glad you have two women there, because my question is this. I would like to know what their thoughts and attitudes are on sexual toys for sexual enhancement. And this is not a funky question.
No,
it's in earnest.
No, I take it's an earnest question, Ted, and it's an important and good question as well. Let me put that to you, Pepper Schwartz.
Sure, I wrote a book called The Normal Bar: The Surprising Secrets of Happy Couples, and we took a look at sex toy use in that. And half of people over 50 use them. 2/3 of people in their 35 to 45 range do, and the lowest users were 18 to 23 because I think they haven't sort of discovered that that's okay yet. But the sex toys are really important, I think, and I think it's good that 50% of people use it, but I would want to say why not 100%? Because particularly we talked about sluggish blood, you know, in terms of Viagra or whatever.
Well, you know, women often have a harder time reaching an orgasm. It's a little bit more complicated system, but these sex toys can really help you learn or overcome some of the, you know, the sluggish blood syndromes that has to come into the genital area to have more excitement. And they're fun to introduce into a relationship, and they're intimate. But most of all, they're highly effective and make every sexual act likely to have an orgasm. There's some for men as well. I think that I've had women that I've taken to a sex shop who were out of a long-term marriage, either from widowhood or divorce, and they had never been in one. And once they had been introduced, because they were very shy about doing that, they thought, oh, my God, why haven't I done this before? Now, because of the Internet, you can find these things very privately. And, you know, I really encourage middle-aged people, or all people, to introduce these into their lives.
Helen, you want to add to that?
I just totally agree. I mean, anything in the bedroom where there's two consenting adults should be perfectly fine. And, you know, novelty drives up the dopamine system in the brain and can sustain feelings of romantic love. So bringing novelty in the – I don't mean swinging from the chandeliers, but even a little sex toy. But, you know, I'm not against chandeliers.
Exactly.
I think – you know, a novelty, and it doesn't even have to be in the bedroom. I mean, you can go do novel things together outside of the bedroom, not sexual things, and that'll drive up the dopamine and help to sustain feelings of romantic love. So, and of course, with orgasm, there's a real flood of oxytocin and vasopressin giving you feelings of deep attachment to the person. So any way you can achieve excitement and some real fun in the bedroom is going to help much more than just your sex life, but your romantic lives, but your daily lives together.
A couple of comments here about STDs. Let me read from Rosemary. She says, "I've been widowed for a little more than a year. I would be very reluctant to date again because of fear of STDs." An anonymous comment: could they discuss the fact that the STD rate is fastest growing among seniors? How can that be addressed? Is this a problem, Pepper?
Well, it's the fastest growing, but it's not high. It's still very low rates of STDs. The reason it's fastest growing is because seniors weren't having sex before, and now they are. The fact is that, you know, I'm actually full information on the board of Trojan, and, you know, one of the issues I keep pushing them on is older people need to use condoms, too. They have an abysmal record of using condoms. But if this woman is just prepared to use a condom, the chances of her getting an STD are very, very low. And it's the fact that people don't use them or buy them and then leave them in the drawer that add to these, you know, unsuccessful rates of protecting themselves. Yes, it's rare. No, it's not absent. And yes, you are at risk no matter what your age is. So using the simple and wonderful condom, by the way, condoms, these aren't your grandparents' condoms. These, you know, are, you can literally barely know they're there. And you see it if you put it, I'm not a slut. I'm a health conscious person, you know, or I'm a man who values my own sexual health and my partner's sexual health. You can do this and have sex with real freedom. All you have to do is take care of each other.
Let me get David from Fishtown to join us on Radio Times. Hi, David. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi there. My new wife of shortly 2 weeks was listening, texted me and said, I have to listen to this show. So I am, and I'm very intrigued by the conversation because at age 57 and she at age 62, we have found the perfect relationship both sexually, emotionally, because of the perspective that we've gained at this point in our lives. And I would encourage people to really look at the situation and say, where are we going to be 10 years, 20 years from now? And use that as a perspective point to really embrace and enjoy a relationship at this age.
Well, David, I appreciate the call and thank your new wife for suggesting you listen to Radio Times. Helen Fisher, anything you want to say in response to David's comment?
I really like that. I mean, I think one thing that I have wanted us to discuss is the fact that experience does help. And in fact, you know, with Match, I asked various people, you know, if you're divorced and going out dating again, you know, Do you find this very difficult, or et cetera? Or do you feel that you're coming to it with much more experience about what you want, what you're looking for, how you can get it? And most of our people felt that as they got older, they did have much more experience. They knew what they were looking for. They knew what they did not want, and could be much more efficient in their dating. Experience is very useful, and that's, I think that's what he was saying.
And ending up with someone maybe different from the partner that you had spent many years with, Helen?
Well, I think, I study personality, and people can come in very different packages but have a great deal of the same interests. In other words, people can look very different, even come from a different continent, even speak a different language, but have the same curiosity, the spontaneity, the mental flexibility that a partner had in the past. So I do think that people will gravitate to certain styles of thinking and behaving over and over again. But we learn. You know, we do learn that this doesn't work and I won't do that again. We learn it. The brain is burned into the brain. We remember these issues that we had and we go around them.
Let me get, looks like Mary from media to join our conversation. Hi, Mary. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi. Two things. Once, I'm 50.
Yes.
When I was 40, I met a man and my friend said, he's 60. Did you know that? And I was surprised because he was in great shape and it was a lot of fun. And he was a lot of fun and we had a great time. So I'd like to, and then I felt after that experience, well, it opened up a whole another world of dating for me, not just younger men, but some older men. And I had really nice times. And the second thing is, now that I'm 50, I'm running into men that are married. It seems that their wives aren't, as interested in sex, or they're just more traditional, and it's a little bit off-putting when these men haven't dealt with that.
So they're married, but they want to date you, Mary?
Yeah, and they just seem to think they're just, as you were saying, they're very open and, they want to experience life and this sort of thing, but they haven't sort of wrapped things up with their wife, or they don't want to let go of that the years of happiness and, they don't want to divorce their wife, but they want to have live more. You understand what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. Let me see what Pepper Schwartz has to say. Pepper, your thoughts.
Well, I know that's true. There's some women who close up shop, and I always say to them, where do you think he's going to go? The fact is a lot of people do not want to disturb their life in later years of marriage, but they don't want a sexless life either, and they will go out looking, particularly with the Internet. And, of course, that's obnoxious to people who are being approached by people who, have nothing to offer except that sexual moment, are wonderful people, but they'll never really be yours, which is, of course, there's all kinds of moral issues as well. So the fact is that, this isn't something you can unilaterally say, okay, I'm not interested, either male or female, and expect a partner always to follow the vows that they actually intended on keeping, but don't really want a chaste life for the rest of their lives. So you shut off your sexuality at some peril to your relationship, that's for sure.
Well, we're almost out of time here, but to you, Helen Fisher, and I'm thinking about sort of the other side of this, is does everyone actually want to have a partner, or do they just enjoy the dating scene and maybe even sleeping around in older age?
Yeah, that's one of the they are sleeping around at older age. In fact, older people have actually just as many one-night stands and have had just as many one-night stands and friends with benefits as younger people. We've got data on that. But the vast majority of people really at every age are at some point really looking for their next true, deep, intimate partnership, and old people just as much as younger people. They're not desperate.
Right.
They're not going to give up the farm until they find the right one. But older people are looking for love just the way younger people are. This brain system just doesn't quit.
Well, that's the perfect note to end our conversation on. Helen Fisher, thanks so much for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you very much.
And Pepper Schwartz, thank you very much as well.
It's my pleasure, and also to be sharing it with my good friend Helen.
Indeed,
it was. And same.
It was a good conversation. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out much more about this program, including how to download a podcast of the show, how to find us on Facebook and Twitter. You can also sign up for our newsletter and find us on satellite radio. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Debbie Builder, Emily Bryant, and John Ahrens. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll